Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello everybody, welcome to the first of two Q&A shows that end our summer of football here at the Big Interview with Graham Hunter at the Euros. Padding up as we speak are Graham Hunter, host of the Big Interview, and Pete Jensen, our special guest for our monthly Q&A shows from La Liga Television. They will be facing the bowling of our socios who support this podcast. They put questions to guests, they get stuff early, sometimes they get stuff exclusively. To find out more about becoming a socio, go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter. So let's start the Q&A with questions from the socios. The first set are on the final. And the first question comes from socio Ian Boddy, who asks, shouldn't we give some credit to the Italians who looked good from the start and who had the people on and off the pitch who could analyse situations as quick as you, Graham, said England didn't do during the same game? Graham, you spoke a lot in the analysis you gave us of the final, straight off the back of the game, straight on the whistle, that really focused on England's shortcomings in the way they approached the game. So we didn't get the chance to speak in depth about the Italians.
The way to appreciate the Italians, first of all, is for those who didn't hear Gareth Southgate's analysis of why he was using 3-5-2. He said he wanted three at the back so that he could use particularly Trippier wide, but also Shaw to a lesser extent. I didn't think Shaw, after his goal and one more opportunity when he got high, didn't really spread the pitch. And I'm not being critical at all, but his argument was that Italy need to be thwarted at the back. And that was a point I made in the preview, that coming forward, Bonucci, but particularly Chiellini, and either Di Lorenzo or it happened to be Emerson, not Spinazzola, that's where things began for Italy. That's where all their nice meals were cooked. And he wanted Trippier to not only press back Emerson, but he wanted the England wing-backs to spread the pitch wide. What Southgate said was that the more he got his wing-backs to not only peg back, but spread wide Italy's wing-back, Italy's two defenders, because they were, in theory, they were four at the back, and he wanted to isolate Chiellini and Bonucci a little bit, and he wanted the wing-backs to allow space for Mount and Sterling to pillage in between the two defenders. So that was the idea. And Ian, I would say that what Italy did, and I couldn't see Mancini coming out and shouting and saying, this is how we're going to reorientate, but they did. And yeah, so full credit for the fact that what they did was they played a maximum of three at the back. They started out as four at the back, Italy. They played a maximum of three at the back, often only two, or with one of the central midfielders, whether it was Jorginho, and Verratti did it too. If the two fullbacks were high up, they would drop back like Busquets does at Barcelona in between the two centre halves. They would have three players plus the keeper to play the ball out. Kane is lumbering in that situation, actually doesn't bother to press, trots around as if to show, hey, look, you know, I'm in the general region. And Verratti or Jorginho just walked past him, and suddenly the extras in midfield were overwhelming England. But the change was, instead of playing four at the back, quite often it was Bonucci and Chiellini, with Di Lorenzo came into the midfield, but Emerson actually went quite high, went reasonably wide and high at the pitch. So when you got Insigne and Chiesa, to a lesser extent, but dropping back into a midfield that already had Barella and Jorginho and Verratti, plus one or other of the fullbacks, at times England were utterly swamped. So the first intelligent thing they did there, Ian, was understand what England were trying to do and go, OK, instead of playing 4-3-3, we won't. We simply won't. I mean, they played something like 2-6-2. And that sounds odd because nobody would ever name that formation. But Ian, I can't tell you whether that was the players reacting or it was Mancini saying, reshuffle.
I just wanted to break in here because Liam McLaughlin, another socio, I think, has been listening to your analysis of the final already and was making his own live. It was obvious to me and my two mates cheering on Italy, oops, in a Glasgow boozer after a few tenants, that Italy's domination of midfield was the key to the match, bemusing and infuriating in equal measure for Southgate and Cohen not to have saw it. That's exactly what you're describing, Graham.
Yeah, but I'm on a hand to Pete now because I've had a big mouth voice on the reaction to Ian's. I mean, it was a partial reaction because there are other things, as Ian points out, that we can laud Italy for understanding how to do. And Liam's, I think Liam's trying to, you know, flog tenants and say it was tenants' power that helped him see it. But, you know, I want to hear from Pete what he feels as an England supporter, because to me, all I felt was pure frustration at how England could not see it and not respond.
It is a special brew, in fairness. On Graham's point, both like Ian, Graham for sure, and Liam mentioned the midfield domination. And while we're still in Italy, Lee Allen also asks, did experience play a part in the final? You know, Italy had much more experience of being... I think he's almost talking systematically, you know, about the Italian sort of history going deeper in tournaments, because they actually had a pretty young team themselves. But as Graham says, as an England supporter watching that final, what was your reaction to the way the game unfolded?
I think the 55 years not being in a final did start to tell at the start of the second half, really. I mean, these are really young players, and there's no reason why any of them should remember, you know, Alan Ball and Nobby Styles any more than they should remember Noddy and Big Ears. But they... In the end, I think the weight of having waited so long to play a final, it's quite incredible that you know, 5 decades without reaching a final. It's one thing not to win another trophy, but to not even get to a final. I think we scored, dare I say it, too early, because the previous question talking about the fact that we were outnumbered in midfield, we just seemed to take a step back after we scored. You know, we had a 10-minute spell after the goal when we were okay, but the longer the half went on, the worse we got, and the second half was appalling. There was always a problem with the way that Southgate wanted England to line up with the double pivot. And when you put behind a double pivot a back five, you're playing with a back seven, and you're asking an awful lot of the three remaining outfield players on the pitch. And if those three remaining outfield players on the pitch include Harry Kane, who had the strangest of tournaments because he looked like what they call the second division in Spain, Liga Smart Bank striker in the first two matches, and then he looked like the Ballon d'Or all of a sudden. And then when it mattered most in the last game in the final, he went back to playing as he had played in the first two matches. When Southgate switched to a back five, my mind went back to Italia 90. Which was the last time I'd probably been so excited about England, with the exception of 96. And England played a back five, Italia 90, that included Pearce and Parker as fullbacks. So proper fullbacks, not even wingbacks. Parker definitely was not a wingback, he was a fullback. But the midfield in that team was Platt, Gascoigne and Waddle. England's midfield playing with a five included two players who really are happier sitting just in front of the defence. And as good as Phillips and Rice were, it just seemed that the balance was tipped too much in favour of being defensive and not being attacking. And when you've then got a number nine who takes dropping off and associating with his midfielders to the absolute extreme and doesn't want to be on the front foot, and you get the early goal, so psychologically everyone's thinking, well, maybe we just can see this out here. Maybe we've done enough. So I thought all those things came together. Southgate should have seen that. He should have seen that unfolding in front of his eyes. It shouldn't have taken the Italy goal for him to try and change it. Unfortunately, it did. I don't think Southgate... I think you have to bear in mind the fact that he's got England to a semi-final of a World Cup and a final of a European Championships. And no England manager's done that since the last time he won something. But he was found wanting in the final. There's no question about it. I mean, what was the first question?
Ian Boddy wanted to give more credit to the Italians.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my immediate reaction was that more credit. I mean, it seemed they were everyone's favourite team right from the start. When the kind of backroom staff came out in those powder blue jackets and everyone just swooned. And we all love Vialli and we all love De Rossi and Daniele Orealli. But In terms of winning the tactical battle in the final, I thought Gareth Southgate made it easy for them.
Lee's question about comparative experience, I think that can be an explanation for a defeat when you see it begin to cut away at players' tiredness, their choice making, the way in which, on regular occasions, when England won the ball back, they abandoned the personality that's being constructed. So even though I'm going to argue that, you know, a positive way forward for England is either to have far more coaching experience by Gareth Southgate's left and right hands, or that probably his limit is the World Cup and then he needs to be moved on for very specific reasons. Even given all of that, Italy's experience showed most on the bench, I think, where when Cristante came on, his movement to the front post was very clearly instructed. He did it twice. It caused havoc the first time, caused a goal a second time. It looked desperate that a team that wants to win it, and prior to maybe the second 15 of extra time, Italy weren't playing for penalties. During the second 15, they definitely were. But when they have to take off, Chiesa's enforced, but Insigne and Verratti were real examples to Southgate about what to do with Kane. Irrespective of how good you are, once your race is run, your race is run. And Kane, Pete's description of Kane is typically, you know, acerbic, and there were moments when his football simply didn't look right, particularly at the beginning of the tournament. But across the latter part of the tournament, goals aside, the evidence that he's a very good link player, that he's a very good 10, that he's actually quite good at, when he's not throwing himself around, getting his body in the way, turning and laying off and buying some time, he's pretty good at that. But when you're being flooded, and when the central midfielder who drops in between the two centrales can walk past you, and your team isn't playing a game that Harry Kane can profit from, that's the key, then you replace Harry Kane. And experience, Lee, I disagree with your fundamental point, because there are examples. There was no national tournament experience in terms of senior victories in Spain's side when they ran Germany off the pitch in 2008. There's plenty in Germany's side. The way you win a final is not because of cultural history and because of an understanding of how when senior tournaments. On the day, you have to, Gareth Southgate has done all that. My central argument, Ali, is Southgate has, his great achievement has been removing all that baggage about England not winning tournaments before, in terms of the way he's turned the press and the media on to this England side, the way in which he's taught the England team about representing themselves, the fact that England couldn't live together in a hotel without, in Gaza's case, or Terry Butcher's case, nearly killing Bobby Robson, or in the case of the Golden Generation, their wives and girlfriends coming and getting pissed in a nearby resort, or falling out with one another, or getting bored like they did in South Africa because they were too far away from the bright lights. All of this is ridiculous to say out loud, but it was true. And Southgate has remorselessly unbaggaged England. And Lee, that's the thing that meant that this was a one-off match that they should have won. And where they lost it was on tactics, match reading, reactions, use of substitutions, and then choice of how to manage the penalties. Lee, I think that if you believe that the general Italian experience of winning tournaments was a central factor, it shouldn't have been. And I'm not convinced it was. I think that the central factor was between Gareth Southgate and Steve Holland, how they read the game, how they reacted, and where they failed compared to Mancini and his staff.
Adam Brocklehurst, I think Graham's just answered your question on in-game management. If he didn't, then I really do urge you to listen to his live episode right off the back of the final, which is, I think, just one episode before this one on the feed. I think you'll find everything you're looking for there. For now, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back. One more, guys, before we leave the final as a theme. And we got this one actually on Twitter. JK Reed, I think, follows at GH Podcast and quite possibly at Bumper Graham too. And says, I hope Bonucci gets a deserved mention in the next pod for a colossal performance. The defence, the penalty, the composure, the leadership, the Italian Ramos. Outstanding performance. Pete Jensen, what do you think of the bold Bonucci?
I think Chiellini's the Italian Ramos, if there is one. But Bonucci was brilliant as well. You never know who the men of the tournament are going to be, do you, until the last kick of the final. And in the end, it was Bonucci and Chiellini. It was their Euros. He mentions the penalty, which Jordan Pitchfork, as the Spanish commentators were calling him throughout the final, very nearly gets a hand to, by the way. It's the one where he raises his second arm, isn't it? And as he falls to the right, and he very nearly gets it. But he was brilliant, Bonucci, throughout, and so was Chiellini. Just quickly going back to something that Graham was talking about Kane, I think Southgate was 100% right not to take Kane off. But he should have changed his position. He should have. I mean, he was playing the number 10 throughout the tournament, so he should have played him as the 10, and he should have brought on a number 9, and I think that would have changed. It would have changed the second half, it would have changed the final, and it would have given Bonucci and Chiellini something to do. Bonucci and Chiellini must, when they're having a chat in years to come about, you know, this Euros that they've just won, you know, they'll say to themselves, you know, we played Spain and we weren't up against the centre forward, and at times against England it felt the same way. But he was brilliant, Bonucci, and so was Chiellini. Do you put them both in the team in the final? Because I thought Maguire was immense as well. And the penalty shootout, as always, when there's a penalty shootout, you call each penalty. Is he going to miss? Is he going to score? I called every single England penalty a miss, apart from Kane. And Maguire proved me completely wrong. And not only did he miss, of course, he broke the camera in the top of the corner of the goal, which, by the way, we should change the rules on penalties. And if you smash the camera in the top corner, it should be worth 2 goals.
I think if you put the best 5 penalties from this tournament together, you could possibly get the best 5 penalties that have ever been taken. There were some unbelievable penalties.
Almost penalty against Switzerland as well was absolutely fantastic. And it's what he tried to reproduce when he missed it against Italy. And I like your counter to J.K. Reid about Chiellini really being the Ramos, because I think if you subtract one or other of the partnership, without being controversial, it's Bonucci I would take away, because Chiellini, although he's far more flawed isn't the right word, but there's a gung-ho attitude. And he just before they scored the goal, I noted again that he was playing, you know, at left wing, literally just ahead of the set play where Bonucci scores. And it's Chiellini who monsters Stones in the middle so that the ball can be, you know, can be free for the chance that Pitchfork saves and Bonucci sweeps up. But Bonucci is extremely good, and it's clear that right from the start, from the anthems, I really noticed, it doesn't change you as a player. This doesn't suddenly confer extra authority on their performance, but the motivation they felt when their anthem was booed, you saw the two of them going, stored up, brilliant, right? And we sang through the boos, and Chiellini went absolutely mental at the end of the national anthem. And sometimes you worry about how much nervous energy certain players are using up when they get riled at that stage of a game or when they're singing until they cry. But not with those two. And Pete's expression that this is their tournament as a duo seems to me to be spot on. And Bonucci's easily the less lovable one. Some of the things he says and does, some of the things he believes, don't warm me to him at all. Whereas with Chiellini, it's quite the opposite. He's the one that emailed Common Goal and said, why haven't you asked me for 1% of my salary? And in terms of his attitude and behaviour and how, what kind of leadership he bestows on the squad, the way that he unifies rather than divides, by a long, long way, he's my preferred player and my preferred personality. But Bonucci's stalwart, ruthless hardness right throughout the tournament, including the final, means that as a pairing, they were unsurpassed in this tournament.
I'm glad Graham's mentioned the booing of the anthems, and there was lots said about it, you know, throughout the tournament. But you can put aside whether it's disrespectful or not. It's counterproductive. Don't do it. It doesn't intimidate. It motivates the opposition. It's the greatest thing that can happen to the other side.
Let's widen the scope somewhat and take two or three questions on the tournament more broadly, although the first one does focus just as intently on one game. It's a different game. For my money, says Robert McIntosh, if the Spain versus Italy game was repeated, Spain would win more often than not. Do you agree, or is this romantic naivete? I mean, we covered the game a lot. I think I buy completely into Robert's point. Pete, we didn't hear from you on it, of course. You know, what was your impression at the end of that semi-final? You were covering Spain as their progress in the tournament unfolded. So how did you view their performance in the semi-final, and do you buy Robert's proposition?
Yeah, I do buy it. I do buy Robert's proposition. I hate penalties. I really, really hate penalties. I'm one of the only people I know that doesn't think they're exciting at all. I think they're horrible. And I also one of the few people that think that it doesn't have to be penalties. Everyone says, well, you've got to do, there's nothing else we can do. And I'd love to see two players from each side taken off after 90 minutes, and then after a further 15 minutes, two more players taken off. And okay, then after half an hour, if it's still even, then we've got to have the penalties. And in that scenario, when you take off two after 90 and you take off another two after for the second half of extra time, you always get the better footballing side is going to come through most often than not. And that would have happened. And Luis Enrique said it after the game. He said in extra time, they were playing for penalties and we could have played for another half an hour, basically. And I thought that was very true. Spain's problem throughout, and it sounded daft saying it after they scored five against Slovakia and then five against Croatia, was the goal situation. We'll never know. Had Gerard Moreno not been clearly not Luis Enrique's favourite at the start, would he have flown into the tournament still with the Europa League final, the wind beneath his wings, and come away with the golden boot or whatever? How much did that take away from his confidence, the fact that he didn't start the tournament? And Morata is Morata, isn't he? Morata is, you know, that one of the strange things about being in Spain when the debate every day was, you know, what we're going to do with Morata. Should he be dropped? Should he be moved to one side? Morata did nothing in the tournament that he hasn't done throughout his career. It was a classic Morata tournament. You know, there was a game when he was awful. There was a game when he played very well and he didn't score. He took chances. Difficult goals were scored. Easy chances were missed. Without throwing it forward too far, with an Ansu Fati, who we all hope comes back fit and flying, then somebody would have popped up and got a winner for Spain. Perhaps not saying that 9 out of 10 times Spain would have won it, but with the striker that they need to find from somewhere, yes, they would have beaten Italy.
I like Bobby Mack's question in that... I think we can easily, it's very easy to sit here in this forum and agree with him and say, yeah, 9-8 times out of 10, if you play like Spain did against Italy, they're going to go forward and win. But I think the honest answer is a bigger one. If Spain, I think that was a defeat included, that was a coming of age night for Spain, in that when they've thrashed teams, big teams, playing that brand of football, whether for Lopetegui or Moreno or Luis Enrique, it tends to have been when that big name team, Croatia, Argentina, Germany, have been flat on their feet for whatever reason, missing players, maybe tired after a tournament. And if Spain's passing is quick, it puts a magnifying glass on teams that are slow to think, slow to move. Robert's idea that predominantly Spain win that game is fine to argue out, and I don't have a big problem with it. The really big deal is, if they play a version of that, rather than the rather sluggish football they played against, say, Greece when they drew, or Georgia when almost rocket goal got them out of trouble. If they play like that, with that type of confidence in themselves, confidence in advanced positions, use of the ball, where you take risks. It was a coming-of-age night for Olmo. As much as, you know, he's missed a penalty, shouldn't have been first penalty taker because he was exhausted. That's the greatest game of his life, I think, club games included. That was, he was astonishing that game. But for many in that side, I think, that's an absolute ceiling of conviction that if they play that style at that pace with that amount of acceptable actuarial risk, then normally they will score goals. They won't be coming up against Donnarumma, Bonucci, Chiellini more than, you know, twice in 70 games. And that style, Robert, I think the big deal is that style, with whatever additions, Pete's mentioned Ansu, but there are others who will fit into that, namely Carvajal, if he ever stays fit for 8, 9, 10, 12 months on the trot. The truth is that style will normally defeat just about anybody. And Spain sitting at home and watching Italy win a game where they played with the exact, I mean, I don't know if it's inverse or converse, let's call it inverse, proportion stats, whereby, you know, it was about 70-30 to Spain in the semi-final. Overall, it was just under 70-30, although there were spells when it was, I mean, I saw a spell where it was 72-38 in the 65th minute in favour of Italy. They got the same result. They manufactured a similar level of confidence and tactical acuity with the exact opposite amount of possession. And Spain will have sat at home going, well, now looking at the semi-final and the final, not just the night we were beaten, that tournament was ours for the taking. You know, they screwed up by not taking chances more. That was theirs for the taking. I think that they would have, I think they would have beaten England unhandsomely looking at what we saw on Sunday night. It was my conviction that they had the wherewithal to beat England. Set place for England, different against Spain, very different chances there. Spain's inability to be convincing when they got good chances to score. It could have been a hell of a game, but they will sit at home, that group, and those who think they should have been that group, saying, well, if that's the European champion, then, you know, we're breathing right down their neck and ready to scud them over the head with our beautiful play.
More on that in the second part of our Q&A. Just to wrap up this first part, we have a question from our sponsors at Bet365 who ask which players went under the radar during this tournament for their performances. So guys, I don't know if either or both of you have had a chance to think about somebody who maybe didn't make the team of the tournament but would have made yours.
I'll buy Pete a bit of thinking time, which traditionally he uses extraordinarily well. And I'll admit that coming into the tournament, I didn't know enough about Denzel Dumfries.
Oh, you
can't. No. If I'd said Alan Mullery there, Pete would have gone, oh, that's who I wanted as well.
Graham knows me so well.
Dumfries, as a defender, was daring. He largely did his job well in terms of the number of tackles he made, the pressing, the number of times he won the ball back. But I hadn't known enough about him. I haven't followed PSV properly. The fact that he gets goals gives him a little bit of attention. But he had an attitude and a behaviour in games where Holland were struggling that others didn't have. But Dumfries impressed me. I'm not for a second arguing that he's going to become one of these technocrat Dutch players that rules Europe. But he had all the attributes that suggest that, given the way that Dutch football is still a selling stable, it's still a parade ground, Denzel Dumfries has enough at 25 to suggest that he'll be making them a lot of money relatively soon, and he'll be moving on to La Liga, the Bundesliga, the Premier League. That's my impression, at least.
I think along the same lines, because I think with this type of question, you look to the players who were knocked out early, don't you, and think, oh, if we'd seen more of him, wish we'd seen more of him. And I would say that about Kimmich. I thought he was superb in most of Germany's games, and obviously they were a real shower this time. And Jogi loves staying for about three tournaments too many, or is that being too harsh? So I would pick out Kimmich. The Swedes were brilliantly entertaining after, you know, being 50% of quite a, well, it was an enthralling, but it was a low scoring, wasn't it, opening group game against Spain. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more of Forsberg. To pick a Spain player, I think Eric Garcia had an interesting tournament. Something Xabi Alonso said to us once in an interview, he said, this was after Spain had won the three tournaments. He said that international football wasn't about picking the best players. And it's one of those phrases when you hear it the first time, you think, well, what the hell is he talking about? What else is it about if it's not just picking the best players in the country? But if you unpack it, what he means is ultimately you have to pick a team. We can all sit around the table and pick the two best centre-backs and the two best central midfielders and the two best strikers and come up with an 11. But is it going to be 11 that works? And I was reminded of that quote during the tournament, because clearly the best two centre-backs in the Spain squad were Pau Torres and Aymeric Laporte. But it wasn't the best partnership. The best partnership was Laporte and Garcia. And it's going to be interesting to see. Eric Garcia's clearly got flaws as centre back, you know, in the air being the obvious one, and that he would, I'm sure that would have been tested by England had England Spain been the final. And I agree with Graham that it would have been a final that Spain would probably have won. But it's going to be fascinating to see him at Barcelona. It's a deal that's happened. I think the previous regime have pretty much put it in place, and the incoming regime has seen it through. But he's an interesting player coming back to Spain and back to Barcelona. And I thought he had a decent tournament. And I thought Eric Garcia and Aymeric Laporte is a promising partnership. And it's going to be very interesting to see how Luis Enrique plays it. If he's got Ramos playing at PSG and desperate to come back in for the World Cup.
Okay, that's everything we have for this first part of our Q&A at the end of the Euro. We'll be back very soon with more. But for now, thank you, Robert. Thank you, JK. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Lee, Liam, and Ian for all your questions. Thank you, Pete and Graham. Back tomorrow with more.